Hello, Vet Blast podcast listeners. Did you notice you can earn 0.25 CE credits with this podcast? After listening to this podcast, head on over to dvm360.com/flex and then sign in or register for a free account. Then select the podcast and follow the online prompts to claim your CE.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. We want to thank our friends at Zoetis for sponsoring this wonderful podcast. And we're going to be talking about streamlining your analysis with artificial intelligence with the one and only Dr. Ananda Haskin. How are you, my friend?
I am doing fantastic. I'm so excited to be here with you today.
Did you like what we did there? Streamlining for urine out?
I'm loving the puns. Yeah, keep them coming.
All right. Well, you're in for a good time.
All right.
But to our listeners, Dr. Haskin is a medical platform lead for Zoetis Global Diagnostics, primarily focused on development and support of VET scan images applications. Prior to this role, Dr. Haskin spent 12 years as a professional services veterinarian focused on pharmaceutical product support, marketing, and customer and sales representative education. She has supported all divisions of pharmaceuticals and biologics with a special interest in parasitology, dermatology, and immunology. Dr. Haskin's goal is to provide veterinarians with the tools to effectively utilize new products for the best clinical outcomes for their patients. She recently returned to the United States after a year of global experience in Ireland with her partner David and cat Kate. When not working, Dr. Haskin enjoys finding new hiking trails and gardening. Oh my goodness, such a wonderful life you got there, my friend. I love it.
It's fantastic. I can't complain.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Okay, so we're here to talk about urinalysis today, which is such a vital part of the diagnostic minimum database. But I know I run a ton of urinalysis in the ER department on a regular basis, but let's kind of remind our listeners about why we run UAs in the first place.
Absolutely. The urinalysis is really a quick and inexpensive test, and really most hospitals can perform this. It's going to be essential as part of that diagnostic evaluation for sick patients. You really do need it to be properly interpreting the results of your chemistry panel. Really want to grab that urine at the same time as you get blood every time for your CBC and your chemistry panel. And actually at Zoetis, we always like to say, never end your minimum database sentence with a CBC and a chemistry. Always end that sentence with a urinalysis. Also, you definitely want to make sure that you have knowledge of those hematology and chemistry results so that you can properly interpret any abnormalities that you might have in your urine, things like hematuria, glucosuria, or ketoneuria. Also, yeah, you might discover abnormalities in your urinalysis even before there's evidence of disease on any of your other testing modalities. So again, for example, like bilirubinuria prior to hyperbilirubinemia or proteinuria before you have azotemia when you have patients with renal disease.
So it's so understandable that we need to run these urinalyses on the minimum database on sick patients. But how often should we be performing these UAs in veterinary patients who are coming in, say, for wellness visits or those that are really not sick?
I like to look at trusted resources like AHA. Right, the American Animal Hospital Association. They have guidelines around this that can be really helpful for veterinarians in practice. They have guidelines based on age for running minimum databases. And so what they'll say is in adults, you want to do a full minimum database, including that urinalysis, really annually in dogs, and every 1 to 2 years for cats. And then for senior patients, it becomes even more important to do it regularly. So they actually recommend every 6 to 12 months to do that urinalysis as part of that minimum database.
So it's clear that, you know, we should be running, you know, a urinalysis in the vast majority of sick patients and regularly, and apparently the healthy pets as well. But do you have any current information around urinalyses being performed in veterinary practice overall?
Yeah, we have really interesting information published recently that indicates that really the answer is only sometimes. And so there's a survey that was sent out through VIN to US and Canadian veterinary professionals that got over 1,000 veterinarians to respond. And of course, being in veterinary medicine, you understand that getting 1,000 veterinarians to respond to anything is
miracle.
Shocking. But it really gave us a lot of great information to understand sort of the how and why of urinalyses being performed in practice today. And what we found is that only 32% of veterinarians are performing urinalyses at the same time as CBCs and chemistries. And that is really concerning. And when they looked at the reasons why, the top three reasons were financial concerns, the belief that a urinalysis wasn't warranted, which makes me sad, and the difficulty in obtaining urine. And of course, we can all understand that. Another item from this survey that I just found mind-blowing was the fact that in 30% of hospitals, it's only veterinarians who are running these urinalyses, which means they're being pulled off of other important tasks to come and run these urinalyses. Ultimately, what this survey showed us is that lack of time and lack of trained staff was leading to I'm not going to say failure, but an inability to perform urinalyses in these veterinary practices.
Oh, that's, it's interesting because I feel like you're right. There really is not a whole standardization that you see across the board with urinalysis techniques. So I think there is like a lack of that. So let's talk a little bit more about that, because I think we tend to be much more cavalier about urinalysis workflow than we would often be with, say, the CBC or chemistry panel, right?
Absolutely. I know in my practice, there was no standardization. And I think it's pretty rare to see standardization for urinalyses in general. Even at the reference lab level, where we know that they have published SOPs, there may be still some areas there where they're not necessarily standardizing things, like maybe having variable starting volumes of urine that could really introduce some variability. When we think about workflow for urinalysis in general, there's so many places in that workflow that can introduce errors, quite honestly, or at least variability. If we think about how much urine we put into the urine tube in the first place, if we're centrifuging 1 mL of urine versus 10 mils of urine, that's really going to change the number of urine sediment elements that we end up isolating for this patient. If we think about things like the G-force of the centrifuge, or how long do we centrifuge those elements? Are we destroying them because we're centrifuging for potentially too long? Or think about when you go to pour the supernatant off. I know in my practice, we basically took the centrifuge tube, dumped it out over the sink, and then just used whatever was left in there to reconstitute that pellet. That really, unfortunately, introduces a lot of variability because we don't know how much residual volume we're left with. And then on top of that, think about who's reading the sample. What is their level of training? And when we look at how many high power fields we're actually examining, usually it's only 10. And those are just a few examples to highlight how, if I'm reading a sample, I might come up with, let's say, 8 white blood cells per high power field, and you might come up with 80 white blood cells per high power field, and we're really looking at the same sample.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I'm laughing because I was doing a urinalysis the other day at the sink, and I use a pipette, but the other doctor was just using the pour technique just from, the tube itself. And just, again, just that variability is so interesting, like you were talking about it. So I would agree. This is not always top of mind, but as practitioners, we're making treatment decisions based on these tests. So we definitely want them to be as accurate as possible. I often forget that myself, that, we may get different test results depending on the amount of sample I was able to get, right?
Absolutely. And I think the other thing we often don't think about is that the actual urine parameters themselves can change really rapidly. We always like to say fresh urine is best urine. And so when we look at that urine sample prep and processing, if there's, let's say, transportation times involved, or if it is put into the refrigerator, all of a sudden, we're going to start to see degradation of fragile urinary formed elements like cells or casts. We might have bacterial proliferation from either contamination or the urine pathogens themselves, potentially. We could have changes in pH. We could have bilirubin or ketones or glucose decrease. All of those things can massively change the results that that hospital might see. So ultimately, again, fresh urine is best urine. We want to be processing and examining that urine within 15 to 30 minutes of collection, if we at all can. And if it's going to sit there for more than 60 minutes, we really should be putting that into the refrigerator so that we can minimize those changes. Once we decide to take that sample back out of the refrigerator again, we have to let it come to room temperature. Because if you think about it, refrigeration is going to cause in vitro formation of those crystals. And that can really change our results and what we decide to do with that PET. So really, if crystallurea is a concern, we want to be examining that urine immediately.
Okay, we need to shout this from the rooftops.
Yes, please. Because,
right? Because this is such a discussion that we have every day about when to do the urine, when to perform it. Are the crystals real? Are they not? So my gosh. So, okay, this is awesome. I think we really highlighted a lot of these challenges facing veterinarians today in terms of running the UA. I can see why many hospitals are not running a UA with every single CBC chem. We talked about lack of time, the lack of trained staff, and concerns over accuracy results when we do run them. There's so many barriers to overcome. And on top of that, it's really hard to get a sample out of an unwilling patient sometimes. So yes. Are there any solutions to those concerns?
Yes, it's hard to get a sample out of an unwilling patient and keep all of your fingers intact sometimes.
Yes.
Yes. And unfortunately, I can't make your patients more willing to pee, but we can provide education to our clients around the importance of that urinalysis. So could we potentially adjust the workflow in a practice so that when the patient arrives, they're actually met by a technician at the door who is there to collect urine? Maybe we can counsel our cat parents. Could you come and pick up some non-absorbent litter ahead of your appointment and go ahead and bring that in with you? On top of that, the good news is that we're always trying to make life easier for veterinarians and at the same time improve the access to those accurate test results. So we do have solutions to standardize sample preparation, and we can leverage AI, artificial intelligence, to evaluate samples so that we do get thorough and consistent results. So when we look at something like sample preparation, in an ideal world, we would have every hospital have an SOP. How do we help them do that, right?
Yeah.
If we could standardize the amount of urine that they're starting with, the amount of urine that's left after they pour off the supernatant, the amount of urine that they actually put on the slide to evaluate, just right there, we could go a long way towards knowing that a 1+ on one sample means the same thing as a 1+ on a sample that's maybe there for a recheck 2 weeks later. It's really important that we have these consistent results, right? So that we can have then consistent care of our patients. Also though, we really do have to solve for that significant inter and intra individual variability for the folks that are reading the slides. Again, your 10 high power fields might be different than my 10 high power fields, even if we were trained similarly. And we do see this between even clinical pathologists. On top of that, if you think about how thorough we are at the end of the day when we're exhausted, we may not be giving the attention to our samples that perhaps we do in the morning when we're not so tired. So if we could instead allow AI to scan and evaluate every single slide, 1,000 fields of view instead of just those 10 high power fields, same level of scrutiny every single time, down to the pixel level, all of a sudden we see that we could have standardized results. We could get efficient, consistent, and thorough evaluations every single time we ran a sample.
You know, I can shout this from the rooftops because you're right. Like, you know, towards the end of the night, there's a little bit more room for error with all of us. And the year analysis sometimes do get put on the back burner. So you're absolutely right with that. Nailed it. I'm like shaking my head and screaming like, yes, I thought it was just us. So it is certainly exciting to think that we can, you know, make your analysis more consistent. So you did touch on AI, which is amazing. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on it because I know the applications for the VetScan Imagus uses AI. So can you tell us a little bit about the AI that the VetScan Imagus utilizes?
To talk about that, it is important to understand the differences between the two types of image recognition AI that are used in this part of veterinary diagnostics. So we have to understand the difference between superficial and deep learning AI. Now, deep learning AI can excel in identification of often difficult to visualize urine sediment elements in comparison to the superficial learning AI. And so in terms of trying to understand the differences here, the two key differences between superficial and deep learning are the number of features represented and the way the algorithm is trained. So with superficial learning AI, there are fewer features or data points that we're evaluating. The human expert will identify the key attributes, let's say, of a red blood cell, shape, color, size, for example. And the human expert will use those attributes to train the algorithm. So the human will say, hey, algorithm, here are the attributes that you need to see to call a red blood cell a red blood cell. And sometimes it's hard to improve these kinds of algorithms because the human would actually have to be able to see more features and be able to show those to the algorithm to make it better. So contrast that with deep learning AI. And in this case, you would have thousands of features or their interrelations, I should say, and their interrelations. So with deep learning, you can actually have attributes or features evaluated that sometimes we can't even see with our eyes because it's the algorithm looking for what attributes do I need to find to call a red blood cell a red blood cell. So what that looks like is the human experts, in this case, clinical pathologists, show the deep learning algorithm thousands of examples of red blood cell. And they say, hey, algorithm, here's thousands of iterations of what a red blood cell needs to look like. You decide, algorithm, down to the pixel level, what you need to see to call a red blood cell a red blood cell. And so when you think about deep learning, the way that you're improving those algorithms is you give them more and better examples of those images. And again, it is breaking that image down to the pixel level and looking at thousands of different features. And so when you look at the differences there and understand that VetScan Imagus is using deep learning AI, all of a sudden it opens up kind of a whole new world in terms of image recognition. When we look at running a test on VetScan Imagus, yes, we are having artificial intelligence evaluate those samples. But one of the other amazing things about using the product is that you can have a boarded clinical pathologist come around behind that AI and verify and give you even more information. So I'll give you an example of that. If you ran, let's say, an AI blood smear evaluation, and you had that AI blood smear tell you, yes, we have a regenerative response in an anemic patient, you could then request an add-on expert review for an additional fee to have a boarded clinical pathologist further evaluate that cell morphology to help you narrow down your list of differentials. really, when we get to the bottom of it, no matter what kind of artificial intelligence you're using, it's really important just to recognize the data that you use to train your algorithm is the most important piece of that puzzle. The algorithms are only as good as the data that is used to train them. So you always want to make sure that the data used to train your algorithms comes from boarded specialists. And then you want to make sure at the end of it, are there comparative validation studies to look at how does that algorithm then perform against those experts?
Absolutely. It's
a whole new world.
Right. It is a whole new world. If I can have an algorithm that says this is a struvite crystal, this is a calcium oxalate crystal, I mean, what a great learning opportunity too, this would be for our whole team. Wonderful. I know we've heard about various VET scan images applications before with Zoetis virtual laboratory in this podcast. I think we talked about derm and I think fecal. So it sounds like you're hinting that maybe there is another indication coming to the multi-use platform.
Yes, you would be correct. Yeah. So currently we do have... You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah. So
as you mentioned, yes, we do currently have the AI fecal, AI blood smear, derm, as you mentioned. We also have AI equine fecal egg count for our equine practitioners out there, and then that digital cytology image transfer. And now, coming soon, early 2024, we will also have the VetScan Imagist AI urine sediment application. And really the goal was to provide a consistent, accurate urine sediment exam every single time you run a sample. And when we think about what this can provide to a veterinary practitioner, it really can be a game changer. We can provide them not only those accurate results, but also a succinct report with pictures. They can use those to help educate their pet owners, hopefully to help drive compliance with treatment. At the end of the day, we want to provide every veterinary practitioner with confidence in their urine sediment results. And of course, provide them with that option to also have an add-on expert review with a boarded clinical pathologist. How many times have we been looking at a urine sediment and said, not exactly sure what this element is. So you run off and you try to find someone. And by the time they come back to look at whatever's under the microscope, it's gone. And so to be able instead to just send that sample right off to a clinical pathologist and say, hey, what is this? It is really, again, a game changer.
Really is. I mean, it's just such a great time to practice veterinary medicine. I say this over and over again. This collaborative learning, this technology that's improving our workflow and better patient outcomes. I just think this is amazing. So fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Ananda Haskin, for sharing your expertise with us. You know, I knew that you're in for a good time. You know, see what I did there.
We got another one.
But this was fantastic. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. This has been fun.
My pleasure. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Thank you to our friends at Zoetis for sponsoring this CE podcast. Don't forget to earn your CE for this wonderful podcast. Thank you, of course, for tuning in. Don't forget to rate the podcast as well. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to claim your CE credit hour for listening to this podcast via dvm360.com/flex, where you can register or log into your free account. Then select the CE podcast and follow the online prompts. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And we hope to see you soon. And remember to always stay pawsome.